Welcome to the Creative Financing Podcast, where you'll learn how to structure terms and use various creative financing strategies to create profitable deals for short and long-term wealth. Whether you're a buy and hold investor, wholesaler, or flipper, learning creative financing will help you do more deals and unlock profits that you may not even know existed. On the Creative Financing Podcast, we break down actual deals we and our guests are doing and simplify the methods and terms used to execute these strategies. Now, let's dive in and create some terms.
Hello and welcome to the Creative Financing Podcast. I'm your host, Jonathan Gallegos, here with
Jeff Rappaport.
And today we're going to do, we're going to continue deal structuring from a call that we had that we played on our last episode, I think that was 43. So if you guys haven't heard that, go back and listen to that one. Otherwise, this one will make no sense to you whatsoever. So we had a caller by the name of Lance from San Antonio, Texas. He had a triplex that he was looking at. He's been in contact with the seller. It's vacant, free and clear. And what Lance was looking to do is give, I guess, a purchase price of $400,000 altogether, and it sounded like he had it worked out with the seller so that he would subordinate the seller position of $300,000 and then bring in another $100,000 in a first position by another investor. He said it needed $50,000 in work to fix up, and that he was going to do that part himself. So Jeff spoke with him on the phone, and he didn't quite structure it right because of the way he worked the numbers. So Jeff kind of gave him some coaching, and they submitted some offers. On last episode, part one of this, we went over the cash offer and a short-term financing offer. Right, Jeff?
Yes.
So take it from there.
All right. So what I want to do on this episode is I'm going to go through two more offers. Okay. So one's going to be seller's subordination. So the same type of offer that Lance had put together initially, and we'll look at how we can kind of structure the numbers a little differently to see if we can make that work. And then one other offer that we can make that will make the numbers work as well. So that's the key right now, is that I want people to try to understand is you can't just pluck numbers out of thin air. You've got to think about what it is that you're trying to accomplish and then how you're going to split up that money between expenses, you or another investor, whether it's going to be you that's buying it or a wholesaler, and then to the seller.
Right.
And I can tell you that I've been doing this a long time. The ones that I have a really hard time with are cheap ones, you know, where the income is like $500-$600 a month. It's like there's no money to split up. If taxes and insurance and water, sewer, garbage is going to take $200 of it, there's $300 or $350 left. If the seller is okay getting no money, maybe I can still make it work, but there's no money to divvy up.
Right.
So I like, personally, properties that have more income. So this one's got potentially $3,600-ish. So I like it, and it's free and clear, so we can divvy up money the way that we need to make it appealing for a buyer and hopefully also appealing for the seller. Okay?
Okay.
So let's jump right back into this. Hopefully everyone remembers the expenses. I want to go through those again. So I want to work backwards because we did that on last episode, but now we're going to stop because the numbers are going to change a bit.
Okay.
So we have $3,600 a month income. We came up with that because we did some research on what we believe the pro forma rents will be in this area when we have rehabbed it and rented it again.
Okay.
Okay. We're taking out our taxes. That's $640 a month. We're taking out our insurance. We estimated that to be about $130 a month. We're taking out $175. That's water, sewer, garbage.
Uh-huh.
We know these things are going to be paid by the owner, typically, especially on a triplex.
Right.
We know these expenses have to be paid, so let's take them all out up front. That leaves us with about $2,655 a month in income.
Yeah. Right?
So we're going to try to structure a seller carryback subordination, just like Lance did on the last episode. And if you remember, Lance said $100,000 down, $300,000 seller carryback in second position at 6% amortized over 30 years. And if you don't remember what happened on that episode, I told you there was at best less than $200 a month cash flow left after we took all that money out, all the expenses, everything else. Okay?
Right.
So let's rework these numbers. So right now we have $2,655 in income to work with. Okay, so one of the things with the seller carryback, the subordination, first of all, it really depends on what you can borrow that money at. I'm always taking worst case scenario. Now, if you've already got private investors that would love to make you a loan like 50 grand, 80 grand, 150 grand, somewhere, you know, not a huge amount, but significant, and they're willing to take 5 or 6% as opposed to what I'm offering, which would be more like 7, 8%.
That changes.
Big difference.
Yeah.
Okay? But I don't want to come into this with the assumption I can get it at 6%.
When you really can't.
Right. Yeah. So I'm pretty confident that if I got this deal done and I wanted to raise the money, I could literally walk into a RIA and say, raise your hand if you'd like 8% on your money secured in first position at about 25% loan to value.
Yes.
Okay? So that's how I'm basing these assumptions. Okay? So if you're the more money that you're offering up front, remember you're offering it at 8%. So that means less money that you can pay on this note, which is the vast majority of this deal.
Yeah.
So, yes, you want to offer more money up front, but you can't go crazy because you're paying a higher rate of interest. This has got to be blended at some point where the numbers still have to work.
Right.
That makes sense?
Absolutely.
Okay. So, instead of 100, I took 80. Okay. At 80,000 times 8%, you're at $6,400, and then you're going to divide by 12.
Okay.
That's 533 instead of 666. Okay. So now you have your 2655, which is where we were income wise.
Yeah.
Minus 533. So we're at 2122. We have left over in income.
Yeah.
Okay.
Yeah.
So now what we're trying to do is we're trying to figure out what we can pay the seller. So in this case, I'm offering $380,000, not $400,000, $380,000, because here's the problem, and I could probably offer $400,000, and I'll show you why in a second, but seller subordination, this is what my goal is. Now, maybe it's not your goal, and that's the great part about creative financing is that I'm teaching a certain way, and this works for me. It doesn't have to work for you. Some are right and some are wrong, but some, there's quite a bit of leeway in terms of how you're trying to structure something. And I'll show you. So I'm offering 380. I can easily come up to 400,000. It's not a problem. But the issue is that I have to create a payment out of that $300,000 note that's going to be fair to the seller and still leave enough money for either me or my end buyer cash flow wise.
Right.
And remember, on this property, you're going to be putting in $50,000. So when we're figuring out our return on investment, right now, if you buy this property and they took this deal, you don't have to come up with any money. You go borrow that 80 grand and you get a note for 300. You just got a no money down deal.
Right.
Which everyone loves. However, here's where I don't love it. If, let's say I just offer interest only on 300,000. Aren't I paying interest only on the 80, by the way?
Yes.
I am. Okay. So that money's not getting paid down at all. I don't care if it's for 2 years or 5 years or 8 years or whatever. When it's all said and done, I still owe them 80 grand. Okay. So if I offered principal interest only, I can keep my payment down. So my cash flow could be great. Problem is, in 5 years or whatever I agreed to go, I still owe $380,000 on this property.
Yeah.
Which might be okay for you because maybe you're like, hey, it's worth considerably more. There'll be appreciation. And that absolutely might be true. However, I feel like we're already somewhat overpaying for this property. And I would like there to be some pay down. So that whether it's me or my buyer, it's over easier. The course of time, gain some more equity in the property.
Yeah.
Again, it's up to you to decide what works. But you should know the difference. So will most people be interested in, you know, buying it at, let's say, 400 with paying you a $20,000 assignment fee? And still owing 380 at the end of 3 years, 5 years, 7 years, whatever is negotiated. Maybe.
Yeah.
Would they like that they only owe 350 at the end of 3 years, 5 years, 7? Most likely they'd like that more.
Right.
So I always want to try to...
So you always like to try to give...
I always am trying to get some principal pay down.
Yeah.
Okay?
Yeah.
But... You should know you can structure it different ways.
Yeah, if you're fine with that.
Yeah. So really what the goal is that I've got to figure out how to pay on this note and still leave enough cash flow to make it a good return on investment for either me or my buyer.
Right.
Okay? So before Lance tried to do it at 300,000 at 6% and 30 years. Okay? There is a misconception. The misconception is that... Because this is going to be in second position and that it's some kind of risk to the seller that they should get a higher rate of interest. So typically, if you think about, if you went and borrowed from a conventional lender, if interest rates are at 5%, their second mortgage could be 7, 8%. And I think this is where seller financing gets a bad name, is that some sellers think, well, if I'm carrying, I should get 8, 9, 10, 12% interest. Okay. Some do. Okay. That's the way it is. That doesn't mean that's what you have to offer.
Right.
Okay. And I'm going to offer what makes sense
yeah.
to me and what I hope will make sense to the seller. And they either like it or they don't. And if they don't,
then you ask
get some
them,
feedback and try to modify it.
Well, and you can ask them, well, where else are you going to go and earn the same percent of interest on your money?
Yeah, well, right now, if you put your money in the bank, I mean, what are you hoping to make? 1.5%, 2%
Right.
best?
Yeah.
And yeah, the misconception also is that, hey, I'm in second position, I'm in a risky place. Well, in reality, if you had a loan on this property at all, aren't you in, your equity is in second position.
Anyway.
Yeah.
Right.
So, I mean, but really, what's the difference?
Yeah.
And it's not like, I mean, you're getting this money.
So that's a great point you brought up, Jeff, is that if the seller had a loan on the property, their equity is in second position.
Correct. I mean, it's no different. And in this case, they're still getting that whatever money they're, you know.
Whatever equity they have,
yeah,
they're still getting paid on that.
If they took out a HELOC, it would be exactly the same. Their equity would be in second position.
Right, absolutely.
So, yeah, but stop thinking about all the potential issues. You will always come across sellers that have certain preconceived ideas. Don't worry about it.
Okay? Yeah, and you should just you should address their objections as they come up, and don't try to address it when it not even an objection yet, right?
I, there's always going to be people that don't, you know, they think that they understand what things should be, and that's fine. They have their own opinion, but that doesn't mean you have to agree to them. And as you know, real estate is a numbers game. Even if you're just a wholesaler, you're throwing out cash offers, and you're, it doesn't work for everyone.
Yeah, yeah.
Owner financing doesn't work for everyone either. Yeah. So
on this deal, was it Lance that came up with the 6%?
Yes.
Okay.
Yes. Okay. So what I did is I'm going to always look at, let's take $300,000. That's the note to the second, or to the seller on a second. And let's just figure out, hey, if it was amortized over, and remember, you can change the amortization. So the less you do, the quicker it's going to pay down, but the higher the payment's going to be. Spread out of more time, the less the payment's going to be, the less it's going to pay down.
Right.
So let's just take 360 months, which is pretty standard, 30 years. And, you know, 4%, 5%, just to get an idea of where that number would be. So in this case, that number would be $1,432 at 4%. Okay?
Okay.
Actually, I don't know if that's right. 300,000. 4%. Yeah, 1432, I guess. But 1432 is going to leave about $700 a month cash flow. Pretty good cash flow for a triplex. That might work. What if we took this $380,000 purchase price, and then what if we upped it to $400,000? We're giving him what he wanted now, right?
Right.
So now the note would be 320. I still don't want to offer him that much money. But what if we offered him 1250 a month? 1300. Now, this isn't something that I do frequently, but when I need to make it work numbers-wise, you can always go to this and offer just principal-only payments, okay? So literally every month that you make a payment, it's coming off the principal. There's no interest. So what if I could do it shorter term? So you have to wait less on your money, 2 years. Because if I'm paying you $1,200 a month, that's $14,400 a year. At the end of 2 years, it's almost $30,000.
Right, in principal reduction.
Yeah, so, or maybe I'll offer you 420 and we'll split it. We'll go 4 years principal only payments. So I can play with that number. And the reason I don't like to offer principal only payments is that if the seller was audited by the IRS, the IRS doesn't believe that there's people that would make loans for no interest.
Right.
So they could potentially, they would assign an interest rate to this loan. And it's always based on the lowest federal interest rate. It might be 2.5, it might be 2.8, 2.9, 3%, somewhere in there.
Uh-huh.
Okay. In which case, the seller who doesn't, you know, when it's principal, they're only paying taxes based on what their tax consequence is over time with selling this property. When they're receiving interest, they've got to pay taxes also on that interest. The way it's set up, if we're paying principal only, they don't think they have to pay any taxes. But if the IRS found out, they could create an issue. Does that happen a lot? No. But you should know that that's why I don't love to make principal only payments. I don't want my seller to be put in a position somewhere down the road. But sometimes I do it. And sometimes I do it short term. So we can structure a good payment that would still make sense, still allow the same kind of cash flow, and provide for the principal pay down. Does that make sense?
Yeah.
So now we have the same kind of offer that Lance put together, and all we had to do was modify the amount down because we're paying too much for that money. And now we can offer a little more money. When I say a little more, less than what Lance had him, because Lance had $1,800 going to him. We can't afford $1,800. The property cannot afford $1,800. But we could afford 12, 11, 13, 14, something, and now play with the price. So would it matter? I mean, could I pay $440,000 for this property if, hey, I figured out I need 6 years of principal-only payments at a certain amount so that, hey, at the end of 6 years, I'm not only right side up, I'm ahead.
Yes, yes. So you can always play with the price as long as the payment works.
Right. Now the only issue is don't sell the property. I mean, if you're potentially going to sell the property, I mean, it's not going to make sense because you got to cash them out at what's owed. You'd really want to hold this property for 6 years.
And get that principal pay down.
It's so funny. I work out like these ridiculously low interest payments and people ask me, so can I pay it off early? I'm like, wait a minute.
Why would you?
Yeah, I mean, you want to pay off your principal only payment or your 3% interest so you can go refinance at 5.5%?
Doesn't make sense.
I'm sure the seller would be fine with you going and doing that.
Yeah.
So does that make sense, how we had to restructure this?
To make the numbers work, yes.
Could I just do, what if you wanted to offer a higher interest rate, what if I offered, okay, so what I just want to cover is a couple of other options that you can consider to try to make this particular situation work. Okay, so we could have done principal only. We just talked about that. And we can play with that payment within a certain range and the term. So, you know, maybe this isn't as appealing, but we could do it a short term, like 2 years, 2.5, 3 years, something like that. So what about if we just structured it interest only? Okay, so there's going to be no pay down, but the cash flow is going to be super good. And maybe people, remember, we thought this property would be worth $500,000+. You know, if they're into it for $430,000, they've got good equity already.
Right.
So what if we did $300,000 times 5%? 5% is decent, right?
Yeah, it is.
So divided by 12, that's a $1,250 a month principal only payment. And let's say that we're doing this for 5 years.
Okay. Okay?
So how much money would we owe the seller at the end of 5 years? Same amount that we owe them right now, right?
Yeah, right.
Okay.
It's principal only.
So they make an extra $1,250 every single month for financing this property. If you do times 60, they make an extra $75,000 for selling this property that way.
Yeah.
Now, there's no principal pay down, but think about this.
Just that interest earned over that term.
Remember, we had 21-22 left in income to deal with, right?
Right.
So if we take 1250, we have $872 a month cash flow.
Which is a lot better than what we started. Yeah.
$10,464.
Right.
Okay. If we're buying this, we can buy with no money other than putting in, you know, the repair costs. If we now push this to someone else and that, you know, without our assignment fee, they'd be making, you know, close to a 20-25% return on investment.
Right.
Okay. Do we have to offer 5%?
Nope.
We could offer 4.
Yeah.
4.5, somewhere in there. That's the interest only. So we, anytime that we're in a little bit of an issue with trying to structure a payment, we should look at principal-only payments or interest-only payments. Interest-only, you got to look at, will it still make sense at the end of the term? Principal payment, would it make sense to the seller? Okay?
Right.
Okay. So now we've structured a good, what I believe to be, and we can play with that purchase price too. So I offered $380,000, but we could easily offer $400,000. And hey, if we wanted to do principal only payment, we could offer $420,000, or we could offer $380,000 and 5% interest, and then they make an extra $75,000 over the course of 5 years.
Right.
So there's all these different ways that we can look at this, but keep in mind, the numbers have to work. So can't just start pulling numbers out of thin air and hope that it's all going to come together. The reason that we're using these numbers is we know exactly or very close to how much income is available and how we're structuring it to give the seller some and leave some for the buyer.
Right.
Okay? Does that make sense?
Yeah, that's the guideline right there, is how can we make it so that we can give enough to the seller and make it fair for them, and if we're bringing in a buyer or for ourselves, we have a good share of that, or a good piece of that pie, I should say.
Yep. So now I want to just talk about one other offer. This is more standard, simple, and the way that you figure this out is fairly easy. So, and again, we could have increased this purchase price to 400. I offered 390. Okay. And the only reason is that in my mind, they're asking too much for their property.
Yeah.
It's a rental property, so that some of the rules don't necessarily apply. But to me, it's like you're giving me a totally vacant property that needs $50,000 in rehab. And maybe it's more than 50 grand. Who knows? And then it's probably going to be worth about 500. It's like, I can certainly offer you four, but I'm looking for a little better deal.
Okay? Yeah.
So here's what I did. I took 390, and I'm going to offer close to 10% down. And the reason for it is this is income property. So on income property, Jonathan, how much money if a buyer is just finding this on the MLS or, you know, for sale by owner or whatever, and wanted to buy it conventionally, how much money are they going to have to come up with?
20 to 25%.
So we're talking basically $80,000 to $100,000.
Yeah.
So if I offer the seller 40, and I like to make somewhere between $10,000 and $20,000, how much money would the down payment be to my buyer?
60.
Yeah, at most, right?
Yeah.
I make a good assignment fee of 20 grand.
Yeah.
Okay.
And that's still a good deal for that end buyer. Okay.
And if you wanted to buy this for your own portfolio, if you had to go to the bank, you'd have to have 80 to 100 grand.
Right.
If you can get away with putting down $30,000, $35,000, $40,000, you just saved yourself a bunch of money.
Yeah, absolutely.
Okay. So that's where I'm coming up with that amount.
Okay.
It can't be too high, but if it's too low, I'm probably not going to get this offer accepted.
Yeah, because it doesn't work for the seller.
Right. So now you always so we have a purchase price and we have a down payment. Take the purchase price minus the down payment. That's what's left on the note.
Okay.
So we have $350,000. That's $390,000 minus $40,000. We're going to figure out and we're going to amortize this over 30 years. And the reason I choose 30 is because that's kind of standard. You could go 35, you can go 25. I actually made an offer yesterday. I went 35 because I couldn't get the payment to where I wanted and I had to spread it out over a longer period of time. So now we're at 350. I offered 4%. Why 4?
Because that's close to what going rate is.
Yeah, I'm testing numbers. Okay, so I'm gonna look at, hey, what's 4%? What's 5%? What's 5.5%? What I do know is that why do I want to pay what I would have to go pay
at a bank?
Yeah, and if I would pay 5.5, 5.7, 5.8, why do I want to pay that? I want a better deal. I mean, I'm the one putting this whole thing together. So, and if I'm wholesaling it, isn't that one more thing that I can offer my buyer?
Absolutely.
You know, hey, less money down and a better interest rate than you could go to the bank for?
Yeah, it becomes a lot more attractive.
It's super good. And if I wanted to stay in the middle, maybe I can get it at a low enough interest rate where the seller's still happy, and I can offer it for a higher interest rate, and I could collect the difference in the middle. It's a whole nother story. We'll talk about that in some other episode. So let's figure this out. So 350, 4% over 30 years. The payment is $1,670 a month. Okay. If we go back to our example, we don't have, we were at 2655 and then we were borrowing 80 grand that was going to cost us 533.
Uh-huh.
Okay, we don't have to borrow that anymore. So that's gone. So we have $2,655 to work with. Okay, $1,670 to the seller is a reasonable payment.
Right.
It's pretty good.
Yeah.
Does that leave enough money cash flow wise to make something work here?
I think so.
If we have 2655 and we minus 1670, I mean, it's almost $1,000 a month cash flow.
Yeah.
I'd be like, $1,000 a month cash flow?
Not bad.
Let's think about this for a second. So let's say that we want to wholesale this. Okay. What is the amount of money some buyer will have to come out of pocket? What are all the different things that they would have to come out of pocket for?
So an end buyer, so rehab costs of 50,000, and then whatever that down payment is.
So 50 grand plus 40.
40.
90 plus anything else?
A wholesale fee.
Correct. And what did we want to make on this?
20.
10. Okay, so $110,000 out of pocket, right?
Yes.
Okay, so let's see. If they can make $1,000 a month positive cash flow, that would be $12,000 over the course of a year, right?
Right.
1,000 times 12.
Yep.
$12,000 divided by $110,000.
And that's their cash on cash return.
That's about 11% return. Yeah. You know, decent, but not super good.
Yeah.
But you can own income property with no loan. I worked it out for a little longer term on this. It would be 6 years. Okay. If you don't have to think about getting a new loan for, you know, the longer the term, the better for the buyer. All these things are like, all right. The return on investment, the money out of pocket, it's not super good, but it's going to be a problem because there's going to be $50,000. We can't change that. We could change how much money we offer the seller.
Right.
Or we could take less money for ourselves. I don't know if I like those ideas a whole lot. But hey, if we gave up $5,000 and we offered $5,000 less to the seller, now we're at 100. 12,000 divided by 100 is going to be 12%. So is it a huge difference, 1%?
No.
Am I going to give up more money? Am I going to offer less of a down payment? Probably not. So what I'd probably want to do is try to get a longer term.
Okay.
And maybe offer a little more money to the seller to make it a little more enticing. But I like that you can make $1,000 a month cash flow. That's good.
Yeah.
The only real issue is this property needs a decent amount of work.
Yeah, $50,000 is pretty significant.
Yep. So cash on cash returns about 11. I mean, it's not bad.
No,
but
it's not.
To be honest, I don't like to be below 12. And to be honest, I'd rather be between 15 and above.
Yeah. Yeah.
But these are different ways that we can structure a deal to make work on a, whenever a property's free and clear, I mean, you have infinite amounts of options that you can create.
Yeah.
And one of the things is don't you get confused because there's so many. Keep it simple. And only make three offers, four at the most, absolute most. Otherwise, you're going to start confusing, and the seller's going to say, I'll take this from option one, and I want option this from option four. You don't want that.
Right.
But
right.
Figure out what kind of works. Play with some numbers. So go back to when we did the seller subordination. principal only, interest only, amortized. Yeah, you can play with the numbers, but ultimately, you see, this is how I figure out stuff, is I work backwards, I see how much money we have to work with, I figure out how the return on investment's going to affect my buyer, and what I can offer the seller, and do they all make sense? And I just keep playing with the numbers till they do.
Yeah. Very good point.
Does that make sense?
Yeah. And I think ultimately what you need to decide is, does that 11% cash on cash return work for you, if that's your goal, to buy and hold? If not, you might be able to find someone that it does work for. If someone can only get an 8% on their money cash on cash return, well, 11 sounds pretty dang good.
The only negative about this particular property is, so based on how much money you have to put in compared to the purchase price that they're asking.
Yeah, $50K.
Which you can overcome. I mean, think about this. This is how I would sell this property, is like, get in for, you know, 15% down instead of 20 or 25. Get a better rate, 4%. $1,000 a month cash flow, a 12% or 11% return on investment for 6 years, 7 years, whatever we could work out. But when you're done, you have $60,000+ in equity. So already, if you've put down 60 and you have 60, you're already at that 80%. So one of the benefits is, hey, by the time that the balloon comes up, I don't want you to have to come up with any more money. I want you to be able to refinance and either pull money out or at least have enough where the balance is, the loan will cover it.
Right.
So you end up with 15% down, a pretty good cash flow, and you could refinance when you want. If that 50 grand having it out there is hurting you, get it up to speed, get it all rented, and then refinance
and pull your cash out.
Yep.
Then the return on investment becomes infinite.
Yep, or close to it.
Yeah.
Yep. And to be honest, if you're buying a triplex and you end up having, you know, on a $500,000 property, and you end up having to have 20 grand into it, so what?
Right.
I mean, that's way better than you're ever going to do going the conventional route.
Yeah.
So even if you had to leave a little bit of money in it, that would make total sense. And if you're anywhere, I mean, even if you gave up some cash flow to refinance it, as long as the numbers still work, I mean, if you only have 20 grand in it, and you're only making $700 a month, do the math. You're over 35% return on investment.
So, right.
And now you've preserved most of your cash, so you can go invest in something else.
Yeah. So I think the key lessons here, Jeff, is play with the numbers and find out what works for you or what would work for your end buyer. And it's just a matter of working the numbers backwards, taking the pro forma, minusing the expenses, and then divvying up between yourself and the seller. And then just... Be aware that you don't have to offer the seller, 8-10% interest just because they're carrying it. You can start at a lower interest rate.
I never do.
Yeah. So that's a misconception that because they're in a second position, they should get a higher percentage. Well, what do you want yourself? What kind of interest rate would you want? Or what interest rate makes sense to make the numbers work?
Stop worrying about what the seller is going to say. Some will take it. Some won't. Some will have to think about it. Some might need a little convincing or negotiations. And let me ask you, if you start out high, where do you go?
You can't go down.
No. Well, you certainly, I mean, if they aren't satisfied with that, I mean, you have nowhere to go.
Right. So, but if you start low, you can always come up.
Yeah. And sometimes they just say, okay.
Yeah.
So, one of the things I'd like to say is that the next episode, we're going to talk about another property. So Lance and I are trying to work together now on some different kinds of deals. We'll talk about an 8-unit. And I think these are good examples because one of the things that I've noticed, probably you too, Jonathan, is that So we teach good practical stuff, but you got to have practice. You got to keep looking at how to put things together, and it comes with practice. So the more deals that we can kind of go over and thought processes and how the numbers kind of come together, I think the better.
Yes.
So we'll go over this other Aplex, but I would tell our audience out there, if you have deals, multifamily, bigger apartments, mobile home parks, commercial, and you're having a hard time, call in. One, at the very least, I'll call you back and try to help you structure something, or I'd love to work with you. If the deal's good enough, I'll negotiate the deal, or try to at least. I'll go find the buyers. I'll get the finance. I'll do whatever. You'll get paid, and I'm looking to work with people all across the country. Now, don't bring me crap. I'm going to teach you how to get all the right information so that I can make a decision real quick if it's something we need to pursue or not.
Right.
But I would tell you, and I think Lance would tell you the same, that the 3, 4, 5 phone calls that we've had since he brought this one deal probably was well worth the time, whether we get any of these deals.
Yeah, exactly. And the educational opportunity there is phenomenal, because they get to work one-on-one with you, and it doesn't cost, they're not paying you for your time.
Nope.
They're just bringing a potential deal that might make sense where you both can make money.
Yep.
And like, what a better opportunity. And I've worked with you on deals, Jeff, and I've always learned stuff every single deal. I mean, every time we go over this, like you said, it's practice. I'm always learning something, and I always try to continue to practice. So guys, if you missed that, if you missed what Jeff said there, he's looking for deals across the nation. If there's something that you're working on and you don't know how to put it together, give us a call. Our hotline number is 877-409-8090. Again, 877-409-8090. You can work with Jeff one-on-one. He'll give you a call back, and we'll probably get your question on the show if it's a good one. If you have a good example like Lance did here in this episode, we'd love to put it on the show and you know, really unwrap it, break it down into its component parts, and let Jeff just show us what he does on this, because it truly is creative. And I think it's fascinating for me. I think this is what, you know, real estate investing is all about. Like, it's where do you get the biggest bang for your buck? How do you get the biggest return on your money, right? And that's why we do it. So again, guys, hotline 877-409-8090. And you guys can reach us on the web, www.thecreativefinancingpodcast.com. Jeff, any last words?
Thank you again to Lance.
Yes, thanks, Lance.
You brought a good lead, and actually two more since then. And I enjoy working with people. I enjoy teaching. And whether Lance and I continue to do business or whatever, I don't know. And I have no expectations of that. And he asked me, he's like, I think it's so great that you do this and you don't want anything out of it. And I said, oh, I do. And he's like, oh, really? And I'm like, yeah, I want to work with you. So if you can go bring deals that you don't quite know how to structure or how to close, let me partner up with you, and you'll learn as you go. He's like, that's what you want out of this? And I'm like, that's it. So, and that's true. And right now, we've talked about this, Jonathan, we're working on having some guests on in the next few weeks. People that, you know, are nationally known, and we'll interview them, hopefully make, you know, creative financing even more exciting. And I'm working on, I promise, that there's already a couple of things I want to put on our website, because good affiliate links, people or organizations or software or whatever that's been helpful to our business that
we use every day.
Yeah, that I would like to, you know, that you don't have to by any means, but whether it's education, anything that I think will be helpful, and it's something that I've done. If I haven't done it, I will not recommend
it. Yeah, absolutely. All right, well, cool. Until next time, guys, create some terms.
Thanks for listening to the Creative Financing Podcast. We need your feedback to continue to bring you the best strategies in creative financing. So please subscribe, rate, and review the show on iTunes or wherever you get your podcasts. We greatly appreciate your ear, and please pass this on. Until next time, create some terms. This show offers general information on creative financing strategies and real estate investments. Nothing contained herein should be considered personal, legal, or financial advice. Every state has individual laws governing the use and type of documents used to execute strategies discussed herein. You should consult with a local licensed real estate broker and attorney before relying on any information contained herein. Information is not guaranteed, and opinions of the guests are their own. Profits are not guaranteed, and there's always inherent risk in real estate investing.